Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, I'll be meeting Karen Kruger, who went from breast cancer patient to cancer coach, and hearing all about the Very Great Pink Run taking place at the end of this month and into the start of September. I'll also be joined by two women with two different experiences of weight loss. Carla Piera Fitzgerald lost 180 pounds by changing her mindset, and Nikki Dwyer, who says her life has been improved immeasurably by Ozempic. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, this was a good week. Felt like summer. My mum returned after almost 12 weeks away with her sister in tow, who is also adored by all. So hanging out with them this week, having dinner and sitting in the sun has been something I am very, very grateful for. I've also been kind of getting out and about, going for walks. That decision at 8 o'clock to say, yeah, go on, I'll go for a walk, that only comes with the summer. So I've been enjoying that and feeling good. And before I went on holiday, I think I mentioned last week, I had been feeling exhausted. And it wasn't just burnout looming, as I had been fearing, to be honest. But I stopped eating meat at the turn of the new year. I made a personal decision for environmental reasons that I'd make the effort to make myself alternative versions of dishes, that I'd use beans and lentils, etc. Because sometimes that put me off having to make two dinners. But I decided to embrace it at the turn of the new year, and it hasn't even really been that much hassle at all. But I forgot about replacing B12, and I had been wondering why my energy levels were so low. I really dropped a ball there, but I'm talking about it now because we all do it. And it just reminded me of the importance of the check-in. How are you feeling? Assessing what's different in your life and looking at what you can tweak to make a difference. I mean, I'd been getting more early nights, but still waking tired. And by process of elimination, including one night almost fainting in a very hot restaurant, I got to the change in my diet over 7 months. All good now. It was actually remiss of me not to get professional advice when removing a food group from my diet. So yes, taking a B supplement. And aside from supplements, B vitamin rich foods include nutritional yeast, nuts, seeds, avocado and spinach. So I'm eating a lot more of those too. You can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Karen Kruger is a Breast Cancer Ireland ambassador for the Great Pink Run, which is taking place on Saturday the 31st of August in Dublin, the 1st of September in Kilkenny and the 8th of September in Cork. Karen has had her own breast cancer diagnosis, and her experience led her to pivot her career to help others on their journey as a cancer coach. She joins me in studio now. Karen, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Claire.
So you are back in good health. You are going to be taking part in the Great Pink Run. Are you going to do the Dublin one?
I'll do the Dublin one, which is in Leopardstown, which will be great. Yeah. So I'll run, walk, jog. It'll depend on the 3-year-old.
Okay. Oh, now, will that 3-year-old get in a buggy from time to time?
No. He's just going to do the whole thing. I'm probably going to have to carry him halfway. You know what it's like.
Okay, but that's extra exercise for you. And you were always somebody into your fitness. I mean, were you training for a marathon or a marathon runner when you found your lump?
Yeah, well, half marathon. Yeah, I was training for the Wicklow half marathon. That was due in 2022. And I found my lump a couple of days before my son's first birthday. So that just put a spanner in the works just a little bit. So I was diagnosed then in the February of 2022 with a preliminary with stage one breast cancer. And then by the time I had a load of different tests and lymph node biopsies, etc., and it had progressed to stage three, estrogen positive, HER2 negative breast cancer, because there's lots of different types of breast cancer. And then I had my mastectomy on the 4th of April. So I had 2 long months of waiting around for my operation. I don't know if that was to do with COVID or it was just to do with all these different tests that I had. But that was a very long 8 weeks of my life. I never want to revisit that again. And had the mastectomy, and then they took all the lymph nodes on the left side. And then 6 weeks later, I started my chemotherapy, which was for 4 months during the summer. And then 5 weeks of radiotherapy. So it was a lot on the body. A lot.
And something that you really struggled to get your head around was that this had happened to you. I mean, you had been doing everything, in inverted commas, right, you were health conscious, you know, as we said, you were doing a half marathon. You know, we do have an idea in our head that I think we need to do away with, that, you know, to get a diagnosis of any illness, you must have let a pillar of health and well-being slip somewhere, whereas people just get sick. That's just the nature of life.
Yeah, you're right, Claire. And I'd breastfed my babies as well. And there's a lot of, you know, promotion for breastfeeding to say it'll, you know, reduce the chances of breast cancer. And in my circumstance, it didn't. So, you know, you can be anybody, it doesn't discriminate. I was training, you know, my diet definitely has changed massively since I was sick. But other than that, I was pretty healthy, you know, as a standard. I didn't smoke, drank, yes, not much. I exercised, I ran a lot, like I'd ran 3-4 times a week. So it just, very unlucky, you know, and I do believe that how I tolerated the treatment was a lot to do with how fit I was and how healthy, and even my side effects from treatment after, and even the side effects that I have from medication now. I'm lucky, and I think it's a lot to do with staying healthy, eating right, and having a good mindset.
And I suppose it's important, though, that we talk about that side of things, the psychological element of going through a health journey or a cancer journey, because there's the physical side of things that you mentioned, the treatment, the reactions to that. But then you've got to come through a lot in your head about accepting the diagnosis, going through that long wait time that you mentioned.
Yeah, it ravaged my mind. You know, I couldn't believe how depressed I was with this disease. It was incredible how low I fell. And I never suffered with my mental health before. I was extremely blessed, and I couldn't believe how much it affected me. And, you know, your body, in my case and in a lot of cases, recovered and healed from the treatment, thank God. But my mind, yeah, you have to spend a lot of time focusing and practicing and really working very hard to maintain your mental health during and after treatment. It is a real challenge, Claire.
And it must have been such a juggle, because you had three young kids. I mean, you mentioned your youngest was just about to turn one when you found that lump. So life is still continuing, and it was slap bang in the middle of a pandemic. So you were kind of being hit from all angles.
Yeah, I absolutely. And then the other side of it is that the kids kept me busy. You know, I went back to, you know, was still doing the same thing, dropping them to school, play dates or whatever it was. So they kept me grounded. They were great. Beans on toast. They became past masters at that for my dinners and cups of tea and everything. So I was very lucky to have them around me. But yes, it is hard. The 1 year old couldn't understand why I couldn't pick him up. And that was really hard. But also at the same time, they were, you know, it's good to have a few rascals around you to keep you sane.
Yeah, for sure. And give you that joy, those cute little faces. What about the pivoting to becoming a cancer coach? Had you been working coaching people for executive and leadership roles?
Yeah, I've been in leadership development, and I've been coaching for many years. And I have been working with the career side of it. And when I went through my diagnosis and my treatment, after I finished, you know, I finished my radiotherapy treatment, the nurse said, OK, off you go. Please don't try and think about it anymore. Just get on with your life. And I thought to myself, that's going to be, you know, very tricky thing to do. How do I manage that? And, you know, there was lots of support around counselling to help deal with the grief attached to the trauma of a diagnosis like this. There just wasn't, I needed, like, I'm an ambitious and motivated individual. I needed something that was future focused, that helped me, you know, get my ducks in a row and figure out. I had so many things in my head. I needed support to channel all those ideas and thoughts and confusion and everything, really. And I didn't find that in the support services that were available. And I started following this girl in Canada who does a cancer recovery program, and I thought to myself, I love to empower people on an individual level. I love to help people. Why don't I see if I can help cancer survivors like me with the context? And, you know, it's using the same methodologies that any coach would use. It's just I'm having the context of the cancer diagnosis. People see things differently than you'd ever imagined before, your priorities change. You know, there's a lot of confusion after treatment, and a lot of people are confused about what their values are and what their purpose is. And having that context of cancer really helps people relate, and I can understand them a little bit better and how they feel. And, you know, I could be coaching anybody that's just finished treatment to somebody who's like 2-3 years down the line and realize I want to change career, but they just love the fact that I have that context. You know, it just is a bit more relatable. I suppose it's like anybody who does coaching. They want to maybe be coached by somebody who's been in banking, if they're in banking. You know, it just sort of helps a little bit.
And that accountability, that, you know, showing up every, you know, week or couple of weeks and having space held for you to say what's going on. It doesn't mean that you have to be doing all your homework and ticking all the boxes and achieving and getting back to life, but just to have somewhere still to go, because I do hear that a lot, especially presenting this show, from anyone who's gone through a cancer diagnosis. Sometimes the hardest part is after the treatment, because life moves on and everybody expects you've got the all clear, you're supposed to be great, but you're like, I, what even happened there? It's the first time you've got to really think about it. So I'm sure there's so much demand for you.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's absolutely true. We don't know what's ahead of us, and we know things have to change. And and the coaching does provide that space. There is not as much sort of pressure to do, like you said, that homework and that type of thing that you would do if you were dealing with, you know, a manager or a director in a company. You don't, you know, I don't put that pressure on people, because they just need that space to talk things through, get their ducks in a row. And it can be anything to do with like work, like I was saying, or it can be lifestyle changes as well, because people want to do things differently, and they've read so much, and they have that sort of information paralysis where they don't know supplements and things like that. And it's just providing that space. Like, I can't, you know, do it for them. They have to figure it out themselves, but it's that space to do that. And it helps. Yeah, it definitely helps.
And is Karen now very different to Karen before the diagnosis?
Yeah, if you speak to friends and family, yeah, I definitely am a bit more, I'm way more focused on my food and the type of exercise that I do. And sometimes I still sweat the small stuff, which I shouldn't, but I do. And mostly I'm pretty much, I have my priorities about experiences rather than, you know, my house is a lot dirtier, because I just, you know, realize it's more important to spend time with the kids and things like that. So they mightn't think that's true, but it's my mindset around it. Yeah. So definitely a different way of thinking and focusing, for sure. So Karen is there's still a lot of me in there, but it's very different. Yeah.
And how do you navigate the fear and anxiety around cancer coming back? Is that one of the biggest things to overcome?
Yeah, that is one of, you know, and the fear and anxiety of cancer coming back is very fresh and raw in somebody who has just finished treatment or is, you know, on ongoing treatment for terminal or stage four. And, you know, you have to just have those practices in place, because those dark thoughts come. You just have to realize, okay, they're going to come. I need to find a way to channel them in a direction so I can actually just carry on my day-to-day activities. So there is those exercises to practice how to slot in and avoid those dark thoughts from taking over. The worst thing is to try and say, don't think about it, because it's going to happen. So it's very raw at the, just when you are, you know, just finished treatment. As time passes, it does, you know, start to loosen up a little bit, and you're not as anxious. However, you have the cycle of when you go for your scans, so you realize, oh, crumbs, like I've got my scan coming up now, and then the anxiety starts. It's about trying to manage that and balance it with positive mindset. Have your mantras or have your affirmations, have your journaling practices, things like that. And it's hard work. It is hard work, but it does help.
Yeah, you flex that muscle and it grows over time. It doesn't mean you don't fall off the wagon every now and then.
Of course.
But yeah, it's kind of an ongoing practice.
It is. And you can fall off the wagon. We do, you know, and that's, we're humans. Yeah.
And how important is giving back like this to be involved in Breast Cancer Ireland and come together. I know our paths have crossed at Breast Cancer Ireland events and at Purple House. You like the purples and the pinks, two lovely complementary colours. To give back to what helped you and to know that there's ongoing research into breast cancer, which is helping outcomes. Has that been very much part of your path?
Absolutely. I really enjoy working with Breast Cancer Ireland, Purple House, and other charities. I work with a charity in Kildare as well. And it's vital, you know, that sense of community is really, really important. When you're diagnosed with cancer, you immediately start looking for somebody who's gone through it. And have they come out the other side? And where are they? And what they're doing? How are they? You need that relate, you know, that individual to relate to, and creating a bigger community with Breast Cancer Ireland, with any Irish Cancer Society, any of them, is really, really important for people. So, the more people they have involved, the more people learn, and have that sense of community and connectedness, which is massive. And obviously the work that Breast Cancer Ireland does is massive around the research and bringing clinical trials into reality is really, really important. Breast Cancer Ireland are fab.
So you have roped in as many people as you can in your team, including your toddler. But you want to encourage people to either come out and run. So as I said, it's Saturday 31st in Dublin, 1st of September in Kilkenny and 8th of September in Cork. There is still time to sign up, but you can also donate to help the cause. Find out more at breastcancerireland.com. And Karen, where can people find you online?
Yeah, and just to add to that, our sponsor, Very, are heavily involved this year. So thank you to all of them for the gear that they've sponsored. Where can you find me? Karen Cancer Coach on Instagram is probably the best way. I'm pretty rubbish at other social media, but that's where you'll find me.
Brilliant. Well, may our paths continue to cross.
Thank you, Claire.
Karen Kruger, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
As many of you will be aware, I often steer clear of talk of weight loss on this programme because of the many unhealthy behaviours that can come from a focus on weight loss alone. I don't believe body size is a sole indicator of physical or mental health, as I often say here on the show, and I truly believe in health at every size. A healthy relationship with food and body is always paramount. However, for many people, weight loss can be a result of many healthy behaviours, and I wanted to invite a couple of people in to share their stories. Carla Piera Fitzgerald lost 180 pounds through a change in mindset and showing up for herself. She's also a brand ambassador for Body Slims. And Nikki Dwyer says after years of dieting, her life has changed immeasurably since taking Ozempic. And they both join me in studio now. Well, you're both very welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Claire.
And weight loss can be a bit of a dirty word in the health and wellness arena at the moment, can't it? Because of the body positivity movement. To say I'm happy that I've lost weight can sometimes cause controversy. And, you know, that's why I really wanted to have you both on, because there can be a very healthy journey behind weight loss. And I think you both can attest to that.
I think it depends on, you know, what your end goal is. So, you know, are you losing weight for, you know, how you look? Is it how you feel? Or is it for your health? Like, what is the reason why you're losing weight? Like, is this a vanity project? Or is it, you know, that you're actually invested in your health and your long-term well-being?
Yeah. What about you, Carla?
I think it's always down to your motivation. As he was saying, it's down to what your motivation is and why you're doing it, who you're doing it for. For me, it was, I see it as the greatest act of self-care for me, is I had been overweight my whole life, but I didn't want to be overweight. I wanted to lose weight and I wanted to feel really good in myself. I tried to lose weight so many times, but I shamed myself. And I think you're kind of, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't when it comes to weight loss. If you want to lose weight, you know, that's not okay. If you don't want to lose weight, that's not okay. And the most important thing is that you do it for yourself and you stay true to who you are and why you're doing it.
What was your turning point? What changed for you that made this be the time that you lost weight and changed your life?
I literally had a realization one day that everything I've ever thought about myself is a lie. I realized that little voice in my head, that one that told me that I was useless, that I was horrible, that I was disgusting, that nothing I'd ever achieved mattered because of the way I looked, I realized that that wasn't my voice. That didn't belong to me. It was something that I had picked up and cues from when I was younger, and it was reinforced by society and the ring of shame and all of the horrible media that we were subjected to as I was growing up. And it just started to confirm for me that narrative that I was useless and I was awful and I was disgusting. And one day I literally had a realization that this isn't my voice. I don't know who I am, and that voice doesn't belong to me. And I ended up going back to therapy. I had gone to therapy 10 years before that for binge eating disorder when my doctor had diagnosed me and said words to me, when you fix the head, the weight will just fall off. And those words, they resonated with me, but I also didn't really understand, because
what does that mean?
Yeah, it's my body that's the problem. This isn't, it's not my head. What's wrong with him? Well, this old doctor man doesn't know anything, you know. And 10 years later, I realized what he meant is that it was what I was telling myself, and that I was using food to regulate my emotions, to regulate my nervous system, to cope as an addict would with, you know, drugs, or as an alcoholic would. It's a similar process. And I had food addiction. And so went back to therapy, worked on getting to know myself, and then realized that what I had built around me didn't belong to me. This body was literally a representation of my relationship with myself, and I was ready to take it off. And that's when I started doing the Body Sims program in January 2020. And 14 months later, I reached my goal weight, which was 13 stone loss.
13 stone loss. Fair play to you.
And I mean, it sounds like it was simple. Obviously, it wasn't. There must have been, it can't have been linear. There must have been ups and downs. But it sounds like you were just really empowered this time by this mindset shift of self-care.
As Nikki was saying there, you know, why are we doing it? Why? What is your motive? What's your end goal? And my end goal was to feel like the person that I felt was trapped inside me. That's to let my light out. That's why I wanted to lose weight, because I felt like the body that I created didn't belong to me, and that I wanted to step outside it. And there were, while I say I lost 13 stone in 14 months, there was 20 plus years of dieting and failing that came before that. There was 3 years of therapy in my early 20s. There was 6 months of therapy before I started actually losing weight with the Body Sims program that prepared me to deal with what I was telling myself and my motivations and my relationship with myself that I had to dismantle. So while it seems like it was a really quick, there was actually almost decades of work that came behind it.
And you can identify with a lot of that too, can't you, Nikki? The ups, the downs, the dieting, the failing, the 100%. Food issues.
I can show you, I have an app called MyFitnessPal where you can, you know, register and log your weight. And I have my weight every single day since 2005. Every single day. It's actually really interesting data, if nothing else. But I mean, when you look at it, it's like it's literally up and down to the scale of, like, you know, 30 to 40 pounds loss. And I've lost the same, like, for people who are still working on stones, but I've lost the same 2 to 3 stone probably 10 times. So that's 30 stone of weight that I have lost over the years, three stone at a time. So I mean, for me the whole point with weight loss is and weight management, or whatever term you want to attribute to it, is that if it was that easy and that straightforward and that linear, then, you know, everyone would do it, and we wouldn't have the obesity epidemic that we have in the country. Like, we currently have, you know, 2/3 of our population are suffering as they're overweight people. And of that 2/3, one of those thirds is obese. So, I mean, this is a problem that affects nearly 70% of our population. So, I mean, if it's as straightforward and as simple as eating less and moving more, we wouldn't have the problem that we have. So, I mean, Carla's story is like really inspirational, but I mean, she's, you know, gone through 20 years of work to get to her end point. And, you know, like, you've done a lot of therapy, and you've, you know, gotten to a point where you understand what your triggers are. But for most people to get to that point, it's like trying to find the fuse that lit the fire while your house is on fire, you know? So, I mean, for me, like, I was trying to look for the fuse while the house is on fire, and, you know, trying to curtail the fire and then still looking for the fuse. But I mean, the reality is it's very hard to put out the fire or even deal with the source of the fire until like the fire is gone. So, I mean, the really interesting thing for me with drugs like Ozempic and other semaglutides is that it puts out the fire and allows you to look for the source of the flames. And then once you start looking for the source, then you can kind of start to address those things. Because, by the way, those issues, like they don't go away. Drugs aren't the magic solution. They don't go away. So, I mean, Carla's done it the other way around, which is, you know, she's addressed the issue from the outset. Like it's very difficult and very challenging to do. And no, not all people are equipped with the tools in which to do that. And if you're not, and, you know, this is not a quick fix. The drugs are not a quick fix. They will help you put out the fire, but you're still going to have to deal with the cause of the fire. And the really interesting thing is when you take these drugs is those causes come up in waves, like in waves, and you can't deny them and you can't hide from them and there's no escaping them. But they do work. The drugs do work.
Yeah, we had Johan Harry on the radio show about his book and his experience of taking Ozempic. Mm. And I was really, it really struck me that he was still struggling with food issues. Mm. And he said it happens to a lot of people that they can't emotionally eat anymore.
Yeah.
And I think if people are going to be taking it, you need to make sure you have a good support system in it's place like to manage that.
But it's like anything, like with anybody who has, you know, excess weight, whether you're, you know, morbidly obese, clinically obese, whatever term you want to attribute to it, you know, you have to look for the underlying reasons of why you are in the position you're in. Is it genetic? Is it chemical? Is it bad food? Is it money? What are the reasons for it? And, you know, I mean, all the drugs in the world aren't going to change those reasons for you. But once you actually remove the end goal, which is the losing the weight, you can probably address those issues a little bit easier. It's certainly been my experience of it. But, you know, like it's challenging. It's not a linear thing. And I mean, if people use a lot of excuses as well as why they are in the way they are. But like, I mean, Oprah, who's got all the money in the world, all the dietitians in the world, she's home cooks at her disposal, home personal trainers. And I mean, if she couldn't lose weight, then I mean, what hope is there for the rest of us? So, I mean, the thing is, it's not one size fits all. Literally, I know, no pun intended. But, you know, there's lots of reasons why people gain weight, and there's lots of reasons and ways for people to lose weight, like that range from, I mean, literally going to therapy right the way up to bariatric surgery. And it's not a one size fits all. But this is definitely the introduction of drugs is the first time that this has been a turning point in the medication of treating obesity and weight management.
Yeah. And there certainly seems to be a little bit more compassion rather than eat less, move more, which I always hate because it kind of infers a laziness.
A blame.
Yeah, a blame.
And nobody's ever shamed anybody into change.
Also, like, I mean, you would never tell somebody who suffers from anorexia, just eat more.
No.
Would you just eat more and then you won't be anorexic anymore?
It's like
that's the solution, but it's not actually the solution.
Yeah. It takes away all the so the support systems and everything else that you need to do. If you tell me to climb Mount Everest, you, like just go walk, that's not going to work. I need to figure out how to do it and all the supports that I need to get me up that mountain.
Or somebody who's suffering from depression. Like, I mean,
cheer up.
Just think happy thoughts there and now and you'll be grand.
As somebody who's had depression and bulimia, I can tell you that neither is going to work.
Yeah.
And can I ask you about the reaction of people around you, Carla, particularly as you began to lose weight and even now?
I think what you will experience is that there are some people who will be very happy for you and there will be some people who are not happy for you. And I think from my experience, my sister lost 92 pounds ahead of me and showed me the way. And she actually did it with Body Slims. And I remember thinking, this is a cult. She's going to put it all back on again. This is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, this is never going to work. And that was because her change was mirroring something in me. And I've experienced a lot of that since. I've experienced people not being happy for me. I have lost friends, but also sharing my story online. It has a way of showing your, not the things that you're dealing with, it has a way of shining a light on them for yourself, and it can trigger us. And when people have a reaction to me, I understand where it comes from because it's what I experienced, because I had that as well when I didn't know how to get out of the maze and I couldn't see a way out. And then I saw my sister do it. I was jealous. I was triggered by it. So for me, when people have an adverse reaction, I understand where it comes from. I don't blame anybody or give out, you know. And there are people who are, there's a lot of begrudgers. I think the first thing that I'm sure you've experienced as well, well, it's maintaining, it's the hard part, it's the first thing
I get that. Oh, sure, anyone can lose it when you take a drug. I get that.
Yeah.
Shaming quite
You've
frequently.
You've taken the easy way out.
Yeah. Oh, sure, listen.
And there is no easy way out.
That's a cop out, that drug. That's a cop out.
But bariatric surgery, drugs, no. Whatever way, body slims, whatever way you want to lose weight or that you choose to lose weight, none of it is an easy way out.
No.
You still have to do the work.
Yeah. Something I read that you had said, and I've heard it before and it really upsets me, is that a lot of people are nicer to you now that you're in a smaller body than they would have been, even though I know you've evolved as a person, but you're still essentially the same person.
Exactly the same person, just maybe version 2.0. I think there is absolutely fat phobia in the world, and there is a stigma around people who live in bigger bodies that we are lazy or uneducated or any kind of horrendous word or smell or all of these things were the rhetoric that I felt. And since losing weight, I have noticed the world has opened up to me in a more positive way. And it hurts. It hurts when you realize that you spent your whole life living in this body, feeling that way in public. And then when you go out, all of a sudden you kind of have this privilege. It's the privilege of looking more towards the standardized acceptance of what beautiful is or what good looking is. There is, and so there's definitely, it can be quite triggering, but there's also an element of who I am now in comparison to who I was before, not in terms of my body, but who I am as a person. I would have been very defensive or offensive. So even before I had so much negative self-talk that I personified it. So if I was sitting here with the two of you, so I would be thinking, okay, Claire is sitting there looking at me and she's probably thinking that Carla doesn't fit into that seat. And then Nikki's looking at me and she's probably seeing my double chin. These are the things that I would have imagined. So in order to cope with that, I was kind of having this offensive, like, come at me, you know, that kind of feeling. So when you approach the world with that feeling, you're met in a very different way than when you approach it as I do now. I'm quite assured in myself. I'm quite calm in myself. And my sister has actually said to me a number of times that that's the thing that she notices the biggest difference in my personality is how calm I am now, how assured I am in myself now, as opposed to before. So while there is absolutely fat phobia and there is a negative bias towards people who live in bigger bodies, there's also a part of it is down to how I approach the world.
Yeah, I love that. That's really grown up of you to have that. I just want to shake anyone that is fat phobic. But you're right. If we're going to ask for self-compassion for people, we need to have self-compassion for all. And we're all learning, I think. What has been the reaction that you have had from others about your weight loss, Nikki?
I was going to say something a bit controversial there.
Great. Well, it wouldn't be like you.
I know. But look, I've experienced the fat shaming. I have also fat shamed, by the way. Like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, like, we all do it. Like, we've built an entire, you know, multi-billion-dollar beauty industry on fat shaming and fashion industry on fat shaming and body shaming. And look, I get it. I get it from all angles, actually. I understand all sides of it. For me, as somebody who's, being the judger, I suppose it's been like, doesn't that person have a lack of personal accountability? And I suppose, like, having been the person who has gained and lost weight and gained and lost weight, for me, it's always been those periods of failure or the periods of weight gain have been the periods where I feel that I didn't have that personal accountability or wasn't capable of having the personal accountability. And I mean, I suppose when you lost your weight, Carla, as well, like, that was a time when you really, you became personally accountable, but it was for not just food or weight. It was actually about much, much, much bigger, a much bigger thing. So, I mean, like, there's probably an element of truth to it, you know, when you become personally accountable for yourself, whether that's by taking a drug or addressing your, you know, your mental health issues or your attitudes to food or undertaking bariatric surgery or whatever it is that you try to do, you become personally accountable for yourself and you become personally responsible for yourself. And by virtue of doing that, you maybe step up into you know, better version of yourself, which is you know, a nicer version to be around. And it's nothing to do with the size of your body, but you do become a different person.
Yeah. And I mean, you call it showing up for yourself, Carla. I've seen it on your Instagram page. And, you know, there is an element to that. If on Sunday you say, oh, to hell with it, I'll start tomorrow, you've almost given up on yourself a little bit. You haven't backed yourself. Whereas on Monday when you're like, no, do you know what? I'm going to go for that walk. And do you know what? I'm going to stop now because I'm full. And do you know what? And I mean, that doesn't mean you have to live this horrible, punishing, restrictive life. But it's that showing up for yourself and believing in yourself.
And sometimes the showing up for yourself is doing something like going out for a walk. And sometimes showing up for yourself is not going for the walk, because sometimes you don't need, you are tired and you need to be okay to be tired and allow yourself to rest. And sometimes it's doing the really hard things that you don't want to do, like going for your breast check exam. Showing up for yourself can be so many things, but it's understanding your value in yourself and doing actions that are going to demonstrate that value to you.
It comes back to the, like, what's your why? Like, what is your why? Why are you doing this? Are you doing this because you want to be skinny and look good in a bikini? Are you doing this because you want to run around after your kids? Are you doing this because you don't want to be dead of a heart attack at 50? Like, what is your why? And I think the more compelling your why, the more, like, increased your chances of success are. Because, I mean, like, when you have to show up for yourself, as you called it, or for me, it's like, you know, I suppose it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Being personally accountable for your choices. You know, like, you're deciding, you're making decision, look, this is actually, the outcome here is more important than this Big Mac right now or this whatever right now. But having said all that, and this is like where the hypocrisy comes in, it's very, very, very hard to show up for yourself and to make, you know, personal choices and personal accountability in the environment that we currently live in. Like, we live in an obesogenic environment where everything, like, literally we are swimming against the tide of obesity. Every single thing that is coming at us in the media, in our food, in our drinks, in our social lives, and everything is designed to, you know, trap us in a, you know, food addiction environment. And for you to actually have the strength, the personal strength and the emotional intelligence and wherewithal to make those changes, successfully make those changes, because lots of people make the changes, they just don't, you know, they don't last, requires great strength and great resilience.
Yeah. And, you know, we also have food poverty. You know, we really need to widen the lens from eat less, move more, because people are operating in very stressful, difficult conditions. It's not easy.
Education is non-existent. Like, I mean, you can run around watching kids. I bought my kids ice cream the other day, and I mean, I was like, please, like a tiny bit, and they put
a huge
ice cream the size of my head. I'm like, this is a child. Like, our portion sizes are out of control. Sweets are old. We live in an ultra processed food generation. Like, we have, people don't know what processed foods are. That's the other thing. People don't understand. Like, and like, these things are all driving us and contributing towards food addiction.
No, the food industry does have a lot to answer for and the power that it has. So there are so many things, you're right, that are outside of our control. But how does it feel now, Nikki, to have made a decision? Your why, by the way, was because you want to reduce your risk of disease.
I just don't want to, like, I want to be around for my kids. I don't want to, like, I felt like I was swimming against the tide. I had two kids in my early 40s, and I had a very unique position of being perimenopausal, postpartum, and having a thyroid problem all at the same time. So, I mean, like, for anybody who tells me to move more, by the way, I've, like, multiple Ironmans under my belt. I'm an accomplished triathlete. I'm an accomplished gym goer. So, I mean, I couldn't move more. I move more than the average person. So, I mean, for me, it was like, I want to be able to be fit and healthy. I don't want to die of coronary heart disease. Your risks of cancers are, I mean, exponential. If you're obese, your risk of coronary heart disease as a woman are like exponential. I mean, all my inflammatory markers when I went to the GP all were like off the charts. And I was like, I need to do something about this. And what I've been doing for 20 years has not worked. It has worked for periods. So I know what I need to do. I know, you know, I'm in maybe a unique position where I have the knowledge and I have the expertise and the experience. And I also have, you know, through work, I have access to, you know, 200 odd experts of medical experts in various fields to help me along the way. So, I mean, even with all of that at my disposal, I'm like, you need to make a different choice here. And the outcome needs to be different, because the outcome is life or death.
And how does it feel now to be where you set out to be?
Fantastic. I was at the breast clinic the other day, and the doctor said to me, you know, what are your side effects? Have you had any side effects from Ozempic? And I was like, aside from looking deadly, no. I know I'm I jest, but it's true. I do. I feel fantastic. I was always fit, but I'm in the gym now, and I'm like lifting more than I could ever lift. I hate burpees anymore because I'm not trying to overcome this big belly anymore. I feel good in myself. I feel healthy. I feel energized. My sleep is better. You know, there has definitely been some negative side effects to it. Like, I think, I suppose a lot of the issues for food with me have, I don't think I ever thought of myself as having disordered eating. I don't think I ever thought of myself as having an eating disorder, but I definitely don't have an eating disorder, but disordered eating. Mm-hmm. And I think, like a lot of women, I mean, and men too, but I mean, particularly women, like, we eat our emotions, you know? And I don't think I'd ever been given the tools to sit with my emotions or process any of my emotions. So I would like eat my way through them, or exercise my way through them. So, I mean, two coping mechanisms, both entirely contrasting, but they would be